I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on. Hello, everybody. Your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, here for Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Another fine week is before us, and we've had a great week last week. There's a lot to talk about. We had the State of the Union address last week, and there's so much packed in there that it's going to be tough for me to take it apart by myself. So what I've done is I've invited a couple of the fellows from the neighborhood. We have Jim, the contrarian Giordano here. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing great, Joe. Thank you.
And also we have Jack Rock and Roll Race Car Patterson here. Jack, how are you?
Hey, Joe. Great to be here.
We're going to give a shout out to our friend Bill, who's deep in prayer right now, praying that this show goes well because he's not here. I got to say, I watched the State of the Union speech, and I wasn't sure exactly how it was going to go. I don't want to say that I started to believe the hype that President Trump was going to, you know, step on himself, or he was going to overreact, or he was going to say something stupid or attack people. I didn't really think he was going to do that, but I had a concern that maybe he's really fed up with these people and he would say something while he had the opportunity. I was pleasantly surprised throughout the entire speech, as many people were, of not only how well crafted the speech was, it was delivered very, very well, but the internal messages of the speech, I have to say, I saw Ronald Reagan's speech, I saw George Herbert Walker speak, I saw George W. speak, I saw Bill Clinton speak, and I've seen Barack Obama speak. This was one of the finest presidential speeches I think I've seen, that I can remember. It was done so well, and Jim and I, you and I were talking about before of some of the parts of that speech and how he crafted it and twisted it right back on them. I think my favorite part, though, was most amazing of that speech was at the very end, probably the last 2 or 3 minutes. I'm watching the speech. He had made all the points he wanted to, and he ended on a very American rollout where he was just talking about America and the beauty of America and the value of America, and everybody in that chamber was rapt. Not a sound out of any of them. And I sat there watching it, and that's when I said, you know what? This is a speech that people are going to remember. This is going to be one of the ones that we look back on and go, hey, whether you like the guy or not, this was a very good State of the Union speech. Your point, Jim.
I thought it was an excellent speech. He was not antagonistic toward the other side of the aisle. It was brilliant in the way that he was able to be very positive, but he also pointed out very delicately the differences between the one side of the aisles, particularly the people dressed in white, and conservative values, without being antagonistic. I thought it was a great speech.
I did too. Jack, what do you think?
Watching it as much as I did, because sometimes I just had to turn it off because of the eye rolling and the ignorance of Nancy Pelosi and some of the members dressed in white. But what I did take from it was he handled himself with a lot of decorum. He impressed upon the American public, again, that didn't hear his messages of concession during the lockdown of the government, that he was willing to run the government in a much more efficient manner. He was willing to hire more judges, to improve the immigration process, to bring more people, as he said, into this country than ever before in history. And still, there was a look of dissatisfaction amongst some of the factions in Congress.
Well, it was crazy when you saw some of the things that these people refused. Now, that's the whole thing in that speech. Everybody knows you're on camera and you're being seen. So people that, when they agree with you, they stand up and applaud. And if you disagree, you don't stand up. But they were sitting down for some of the most basic American fundamental things that we are as a people that they wouldn't stand up for. Freedom and justice and great economy and all the things that we think all of us would be thrilled that is going on. And they sat there and they refused to give the guy any credit. It was amazing.
I agree with you 100%. But that goes more so tenfold for the Speaker of the House. She should have shown a little more class. Yeah. She should have stopped the eye rolling. She should have stopped the shuffling of papers. The ignorance of what the man was saying, and not standing up for basic principles of the United mm-hmm. States of America. She sat there and would not acknowledge it.
She was using those papers as a message for her constituency in order to tell them whether they should stand, whether they should sit.
Yes.
It was very disconcerting. It was disrespectful. But what I liked about the speech mostly was how Trump would get the people up and clapping. They had no other alternative. And then the juxtaposition where he would then bring in, for example, the whole abortion, partial birth abortion, while they were standing up and clapping, and you would watch all those people sit down. And the American people saw all that. They saw that, you know something? We have people in this country who think it's acceptable to kill an infant after it's been born. And I thought it was very revealing.
Yeah, I did too. And I thought that was brilliantly crafted. And when I was watching it, I had a smile because here he was. First he talked about to get them all up, especially the ladies in the white when they got them up. And he talked about, oh, we're going to have a classically liberal approach to saying family leave. You're going to get 2 weeks family leave to stay home, the mother with the baby. Now, he made a very good point to say the mother can stay home with the baby, and they're all cheering, because that's a very left-wing thing. My concern as a business owner is like, okay, I get that. When my wife gave birth to my children, she needed to be home, and that was good, but we ate the cost of that she took time off. But this is going to say your business owners are going to have to pay for someone to have 2 more weeks of, even though it's not a vacation, 2 more weeks off would pay. Well, who pays for that? So that was my first thought. That's why conservatively I didn't really care for that. But to see all these ladies up there and all these people on the left cheering, what a great thing, that's one of their things. And then he jumps right into the late-term abortion thing, and you saw them all sit down, that they were against protecting those babies. It couldn't have been, as you said, Jim, a better juxtaposition. And the Americans saw a clear delineation between what one side of the aisle thought and the other.
The other thing he said was, and I don't have the quote verbatim, but it was, this country will be free, and it will remain free. And then he pointed out, it will never be a socialist country. And the news media, they just went right to this Cortez woman and right to Bernie Sanders, and their faces were so expressive because it was almost like they were incredulous.
Right.
But they were mm-hmm. not. They did not agree with that term and with that premise.
Right.
And that in America.
The whole hall
that.
Should have stood up there. Because how are we even having this conversation that we're considering becoming socialist? This is something you would never have thought of 5 years ago.
Oh my God.
And now it's not only thought of, there are people in Congress who are elected officials saying, yeah, we should go towards socialism now. Now's the right time. It's the best thing for everyone. They're actually doing this. This is not, you know, a conspiracy, right-wing conspiracy. These people are really doing this.
They're
now.
Trying to bring it about.
Yes.
And the backdrop of Venezuela. And Trump even mentioned that. Now you have a real-life example, modern-day example. We can go in history and say, and look at all the examples where socialism does not work. From Pol Pot to Stalin to Hitler, it does not work. It leads to the death of millions and
right.
more. And you have now Venezuela. The people are eating each other. They're eating the dogs.
Yeah. It's
and
unbelievable.
And we have people in this Congress who think this is the way to go. Oh, to bring up Sweden. That's what
they bring up Sweden. Well, Sweden can do it. Well, Sweden is not the United States. They don't have our population. They don't have our geographics. They don't have our demographics. It's nothing like the United States. To compare one against the other is apples and oranges, and that's foolish. You know, people will say that, well, Social Security is actually a socialized program. You can argue that point. The reality is we all pay into it. And if you live for a certain amount of years, you get more out of it than you put in. That's how it goes. That's how pensions work. You put in a certain amount, you get more out. I don't see that as the guideline for saying socialism works everywhere it's tried. All it does is makes you, nobody has toilet paper and you have to eat your dog, as Jim put it.
Exactly. The differences that I've seen and I've heard are vast and varied for socialism, against socialism, and what have you. I just thought it was funny that the main purveyor of socialism in our Congress currently, the woman from New York, was so offended by the president's speech. I was really amazed at the constituency in white at that speech had to look to Nancy Pelosi, where she actually summoned them with her hand for them to stand. They didn't have their own mind. They had to look to her to find out whether or not they should stand or remain seated.
Right.
Now, these are the people that you have elected. They don't have their own mind. I think you ought to look towards someone else in the next election.
Well, I got to tell you, there's messaging, and it comes from the party and party leadership. Now, for years, I've known that you go into Congress, you're a newly elected freshman congressman. I'm sure the same thing with a senator. You go in there, and they call you into the room, the leadership of your party, and says, Jack, welcome aboard. We're thrilled that you're here now, and you're going to do the right thing, and we're going to guide you, and we're going to help you do the right votes. And as long as you play on our team, we're going to give you money for your reelection. We're going to support you. But if you're one of these rabble-rousers that are going to go your own way, you're going to go your own way, Jack.
Welcome to the fraternity.
You're on your own. So you either toe the line or you don't. But watching her stand there, and I saw not only her telling them to stand, but I saw when she was telling them, sit, no, don't do it, don't do it. And I really thought there was going to be some fireworks. I thought they were going to go wacky. But I think she controlled them pretty well. But the fact that she has to control them, Jack, to your point, is aren't these adults listening to the President of the United States talk about the nature of our country? And here they are jumping up and down and screaming and hollering about things or ignoring American fundamentals. It was amazing.
I elected you, be it whoever you may be out there, but you elected those people because you liked what they had to say. You liked the way that they thought. Now they're in Congress and they're being treated as a puppet as to what they like and what they'll dislike in public.
It's really a sad state of affairs. It points out, if you step back and you look, I never would have thought I would have seen this in my country. A lot of politics, obviously, is show. We know for years that politicians tell us what we want to hear and then we vote for them. They have a 13% overall approval rating for all of Congress, but everyone goes out and reelects their own guy or girl because they're all bad, except my guy and girl. They're really good. And these people get reelected time and time and time again. And nothing really changed. That's our fault. You know, that's really our fault. We don't remove these people by the vote. We just allow them to continue. So we saw how that was, and we all agreed here that we thought it was a pretty good speech. I really thought it was a powerful speech. I thought he did a very professional job. I don't think you could argue with that, but a lot of people did. So I immediately started flipping around the channels, watching the other media responses, because that's just as humorous. They no longer bother me when they give their opinions, because I know they're going to be negative about the president, but now I know they're going to be negative about America. They're going to be negative about our military. They're going to be negative about saving babies. They're going to think it's okay to kill babies now. I said this last week, and I'm getting myself upset again. Where the hell did we get? How did we get here?
Yes.
But now when I watch them, I can't help but to chuckle and be mystified that this is what these people really think.
It's amazing. Like I've said before on this radio program, I watch everybody. I don't just dial into Fox as you would think that I would. I like to watch a lot of CNN. I am willing to listen to everyone, much like Lieutenant Joe, much like Jim. Listen to every side of the story. The thing that really bothered me was the problems that are going on now in Argentina should bother humanity in general, which it does to me. In Venezuela, I'm sorry. But what's happening is down there, they already had us militarily invading the country. They had already announced that President Trump has every intention of invading the country with a huge military force, and Russia has already warned us not to become involved, and there's been nothing of the sort. There's been no movements towards that end that I've seen so far. We do back one of the gentlemen who claims to be in charge of the country.
But you know what? A lot of countries have jumped in and said he is the president,
yes,
and Maduro should leave.
Yes.
It's interesting he's not leaving because he's hanging on to the levers of power. But I thought it was great. It was the Bank of England. He tried to get a couple of $100 billion out of the Bank of England, and they refused to release the money because they said, you're not the president anymore, so you can't have this money. So I heard somebody say it on another program. They said, the military will stay strong as long as they're getting fed. When he doesn't have the money to feed them no more, now you're going. That's when the bloodshed is going to start, because he's going to demand. He's going to have stronghold people who are going to see, hey, if I hold him on, I could be in part of the power team, and you're going to see some bad things happen.
Should we step in?
Well, that's a good point, Jack. What's our purpose?
Go ahead, Jack. At some point, potentially, but you remember, the American military's job is to defend the United States of America.
Agreed.
And to send them in for humanitarian purposes, I'm not sure I agree with that as a conservative.
Yeah, right? I don't know that I do either. But when you look at, I can't imagine that they don't have a contingency plan, because our military has a contingency plan for everything that could possibly happen. Is it in our interest as a nation, does that affect our security, that if Russia and China are now in that area, and they are, they're supporting Maduro, you don't think they're letting them in the back door, that they're setting up bases or whatever they might be doing. Now we have them in our hemisphere. Is that in our interest now, just like Nicaragua back in the day? We had the communists coming in and setting up bases, and we had to get rid of that because that endangers us if they can surround us. We don't know that that's happening right now. There's a lot of chaos, but it's a very good question to ask, and I'm sure we're going to see things as it's changing in the future. What I wanted to say is, how did you see the change in how the media, Jim, handled the president's speech compared to what you saw? Did it sound like they saw a completely different speech?
Oh, absolutely. Depends on which media outlet you were talking. But I found it very ironic. CBS News and all these polls came out with a 78% approval rating, and they were horrified.
Yes, they were.
And not only that, the demographics of the people who watched the speech, many people watched that speech who are not actively involved in politics.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually saw President Trump being very presidential, being very conciliatory. And it was not what they were told.
It wasn't through the lens of the media.
Yeah, by the media. Right.
He publicized his compromises.
Yeah,
right. And no one was ready for that because no one was informed that he had done that.
Right.
So for most people in the United States, that's the first time they heard President Trump's compromises after he presented the Congress with three different plans.
All they were told was he shut it down and he's
wants the bad guy.
Right.
He's the bad guy.
So interesting how the press handled it compared to real people. I want to thank you guys for coming into this segment. Hey, will you hang around for a couple more?
I like that comment, compared to real people. Thank you, Joe.
Yes. Everybody, thank you very much. We'll be back in a couple minutes for round two here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutLoud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming, from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. Here we are in round two. I've asked Rock and Roll Jack Patterson to stay here. Rock and Roll Race Car Jack. Make sure I get emails. Make sure you add the race car, because a lot of people that love race cars, Jack, and they love what you're doing out there. And we have Jim the Contrarian. Now, Jim, you haven't taken a negative point of view on anything today, I don't think. And have you guys actually fought it out yet? The audience is wondering the little thing you had going on there a couple weeks ago. You were afraid to show up, and he was afraid to show up.
Car racing is not a sport.
Car racing is not a sport. Okay, there's millions of Americans right now who are now, they are having a problem with you. So go to the website and take a look and see what Jim looks like, and let him know that racing is a sport. Four left turns and go fast, right, Jack? That's what it is. It's very competitive. This coming up next week or so, we have an important anniversary in America, and it is unfortunately a tragic anniversary, but one of which I am deeply involved because of my profession and because of what I do and what my company does. We have the very sad anniversary of the Parkland, Florida high school shooting coming up. It's going to be a year now. And the echoes from that terrible tragedy still are reverberating throughout the country. And as we get closer and closer to this anniversary, much like Sandy Hook at the time, it was such a debilitating blow to all of us as parents who have kids, and for kids who live in the schools, who go to the schools. I remember my daughter at the time was a high school, and I had spoken about her, and her friends actually watched live on social media as the kids in that school were running for their lives, and unfortunately, some of them were dying on social media. And my daughter and her friends actually saw it. They were moved in a way that none of the other school shootings previously had I seen anybody respond to, because this was real, this was in their world, and it was live on social media. The kids were broadcasting from the school. So as we move closer to that, I know I've talked about it a little bit, but I also have a TV show that I would invite everyone to go take a look at. It's on the disrupt-edtv.com network. And the purpose of this show is not just to show Lieutenant Joe off to the world, but it's called Hope is Not a Tactic. And it is a school safety and security show. So basically, I take my expertise in school safety and security matters, and I was asked by that television station to do a weekly 15-20 minute show on school safety topics. So each week we talk about a different aspect of school safety, and I throw out my two cents on how you can keep your kids safe, how you can keep yourself safe if you're a teacher, and how your district can do things, the right things, to make the district safer for everybody to go. Well, in the last couple of weeks, we've run a three-part series on the Parkland school shooting, because the report by the Parkland Commission came out on January 2nd. And the report is available. You can find it on the internet, and it describes multiple things about that shooting. It talks about the actual events of the day, who went where, who did what, when did the shooter show up, how did he move around, and then it talks about the what went wrong, and then it goes into the psychological problems that this young man had and what we need to do as a nation. So what we did on Hope is Not a Tactic is we took those topics and we broke them into three separate shows, a three-part series. So the first part, we actually showed the movement, how this young man got to the school, what he did once he got there, and his movements throughout the school, and what everyone else did. How did the students react? How did the security personnel react? How did the police react? And then the second part of the series, we talked about what went wrong. And this is where I covered the topics that everybody in every school needs to pay attention to, because there are so many lessons in this tragedy that, quite frankly, though, it's shocking that in 2018, there was a district that was so unprepared for what happened to them. When I read the report, I heard the news reports like everybody else. I read some stories. I heard from some parents that were out there. But when I read the actual commission report and they showed you the video and the film and the minute-by-minute activities of that school, it was not only shocking, it was horrifying. And I can't imagine being a parent who lost a child in that event who is not enraged at everybody involved in that. They didn't just do everything wrong. They planned to do everything wrong because of the way they had things set up. So this is part of what I do, and we should all just think about those kids and those teachers who lost their lives there and commit ourselves to never again. I mean, that is what I retired from the police, and now I have a business that does safety and security, and my passion in life is preventing as much as I can the loss of life or injury in one of these type of events. So this is coming up. So let's think about those kids for a minute and those teachers who lost their lives and never let that happen again. So Jack, you and I were talking about Parkland, and you actually had some connection to that area, don't you?
Yeah, it kind of hits home for me in a certain way. I attended high school in West Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and that school and that area is very near and dear to my heart, and some of those children could be the children of friends of mine. I don't know. It's really sad. Every one of these school shootings hurts, but that one hurt me just a little bit more, kind of hit home.
Sure, when you connect it to it.
What is it, you know, in your profession, what is it that we can do to get ahead of this issue, to get ahead of this problem, to read these kids, more so than just putting a camera in a hallway or putting a panic button in a classroom or putting a pistol in the pocket of every teacher? What is it that we can do to get ahead of this, to see if we can help these kids that are so troubled they feel they need to commit murder?
Jack, that is the most insightful question that you could have asked, because the reality is, for years we've been studying these events to figure how we can proactively try and react to them, to respond to violence.
It starts with the kids.
Yes, it absolutely starts with the kids. And you know, an article I wrote that was up here on AmericaOutLoud.com website, you can go take a look under the bloggers and under the Chasing Justice page, was Can We See Violence Before It Erupts? And the reason I wrote that is because it became very, very clear to me over years of researching these type of incidents, whether it's a workplace shooting or a school shooting, can we see this evidence of this potential before it happens? And the answer is very, very clearly yes. Down in Florida, during that incident, Victor Cruz, the shooter, was well known to the law enforcement community. He was known to the school personnel, and they dropped the ball. And the reality is, most of our communities drop the ball when it comes to spotting this violence and then doing anything about it. Because the way our laws are set up, you can't do nothing to somebody until they do something. There's no way, we have no mechanism to find out if they are a danger and to try and avert it.
And you know, in this oversensitive world we live in now, to approach a parent as a administrator at the high school, or an administrator from the state, or a psychologist from the state or the school system, to approach a parent and say, you know, we think maybe we've got a little problem with your son or daughter. The immediate knee-jerk reaction in this country today is to explode instead of listening.
Right, and because it's scary. It means a lot of implications there. But the question and the answer is, now we have to stop looking to respond properly. That's something we have to do all the time. It's built into us now. We have to have the right equipment, the right training for our staff to respond once it starts happening. The next leg of this journey, and the most important part of this journey, is now we have to figure out, how can we intervene with these potential shooters before they show up at your kid's school and start throwing rounds at everybody? And the ways that we do that, there's a new process out there. It's been with psychology community for a long time, of trying to understand certain personality types and what people are doing. And it's a human threat assessment. So the threat assessments I do for buildings, I show up and I look at your school and I look for security gaps, your doors, your windows, how your staff is trained, how you do lockdown. That's the physical security of a school. What we're looking at now is we're looking at training school staff so that they have a response team. So when they hear little Jackie wrote something in a note that he hates everyone and wants to shoot everybody, that you have a team that's properly trained to now go intervene with little Jackie and get that kid and start talking to him and figure out, what is the problem here? Why is this being a problem? Why is Jack so wound up? So that we can intervene before Jack strikes out and attacks people. So the human threat assessment team is kind of new. Homeland Security came out with a set of guidelines back in the springtime of 2018 that lays out, you should take people from your district, different people, administrators, teachers, anybody in that district, get them trained so that when there is a written threat, a verbal threat, a social media threat, a rumored threat, whatever it is, they get together as a team and then they try and intervene and investigate what's going on with that student before they come back the next day with a gun and start shooting people. So this is the next step in this journey. We have to do this. So at True Security Design, in my company, we offer this. We offer this training to districts. We come out and we train your people how to be a response team to the threats, which is the answer to your question, Jack. We have to look and see. In the adult world, we all know we've worked with people that are problematic. We've had people that, you know, they're gruff, they're rude, they bully, because bullies don't just stop at the schoolhouse door. They go on for the rest of life. There's bullies out there. And we see people in the workplace, something will happen and somebody will have a outburst of violence in the workplace, and everybody says, well, that's how we knew Bob was going to go off, you know. Well, did you tell anybody? Well, that's just the way he is. We can't live with that anymore. That's just the way he is. When you see someone who is being violent, who is engaging in these types of behaviors that are threats, by saying things, people will parse their words so that the threat doesn't sound like a threat, but we all know we feel uncomfortable when somebody says it. So one of the things I teach people is the different kind of threats. When somebody says, you know what, I'll tell you what, Jack, write me up again, and you see what happens. You see what happens around here, you write me up again. Now that is someone who, what do you think he means? He's going to buy you flowers? He's going to take you out for cocktails? No, he's threatening you, but he's parsing his words in such a way so that when you report it to the law enforcement community, they're going to say, did he threaten to hurt you? No. Did he threaten to shoot you? No. What did he do? He said, I better not write him up again or something's going to happen. That's so they can take that liability away from him. Hey, I didn't mean nothing by it. We have to look at that. That's a real threat. Well, the same thing with these kids. These kids go on social media. They say things. They write things. You know, on Hope is Not a Tactic, on my TV show, I did a whole program on things that the kids draw, how to interpret the drawings that they make, the writings that they do, so that you can understand what's going on with that kid. And then the whole idea is to intervene to save that kid's life, too, before they do something terrible. And it turns into a horrible tragedy. So that's really kind of where we're going with this in the future. I know that I'm looking to get down to the state of Florida. I'm working at it now. We have some connections down there, and I've been talking to a couple of districts about bringing my training down there and trying to help them with their assessments and set these things up. It's an important thing for everyone to do. And if anybody has any questions about this, you know, it doesn't mean you have to hire me or hire my company to have me help you out. I don't mind a question. You can always send me an email. jpangaro@americaoutloud.com. You can send me a question and I'll do what I can to help you. It's not always about money, people. It's about doing the right thing. So this is kind of what I'm dedicated to now. And with this unfortunate anniversary coming up, I just wanted to mention that today and talk about it a little bit, because you know what? It's been quiet. We haven't had anything go on, but there are people out there that study the statistics and they look at the month of April as being a month where there has been some high-profile incidents took place in April. I don't know that the statistics bear it out. It's probably more of a anecdotal type of a thing. But we're getting to the end of the year, and it's been quiet. So let's pay attention. We have a tendency to go, well, nothing's happened, and it kind of goes on the back burner, and then it explodes, and we say, well, gee, why didn't we do anything about it?
In your daily work, do you see more schools becoming proactive? The things that I hear as a layman outside of this world is just get a cop and put them at the front door of the school, and that's it. Do you see more schools being more proactive now? Or do you see them laying back because things such as Parkland and what have you were a year ago?
Yeah, well, I think in general, everybody is aware now that they have to be aware of the potential danger. So the most dangerous thing anyone can ever say, whether it's a school or business anywhere, is it'll never happen here. That is the most dangerous thing you can say. And I have to say that in the last 2-3 years after Parkland, before that and just and definitely after Parkland took place, you're starting to see people maybe step away from that kind of a thought. Like, okay, what can we do? The problem is it comes down to dollars and cents and what to do. There are a million people with ideas of what to do. And my brothers and sisters in law enforcement, a lot of them step away from law enforcement and go, hey, now I'll go into the schools and I got an idea. Here's what we'll do. Well, there's tried and true ways to do these things. So I do see that most districts have an idea they have to do something with school safety and security. But the problem that I'm seeing, and this is what I'm trying to address now, is nobody knows where to start. We know we got to do something. A lot of states have put money together to help these districts. Okay, we have money for you. And everybody says, okay, but where do we begin? What's the first thing we should do? All right, and I can tell you very clearly, it's very simple. If you go out to your car, Jack, and it doesn't start, you go to the trunk and start working on the trunk?
Understood.
No, you do not. Do you change the tires? No, you have to know why this is happening first. So you have to have the car evaluated to figure out what's wrong with the car so you can fix it. Same thing with school security. The very first thing you need is a threat assessment. You got to have somebody come out and look at your buildings and look for potential areas where you could be attacked, open doors. Everybody tells me their doors are all locked, closed, their schools are tight. And you know what? When I do my walk around in the morning, I get into almost every single school I've ever been to. I get through windows, I get through doors, I get in everywhere. The bottom line is there's things that schools are busy trying to teach kids. All the subject they're supposed to teach them. They're not professionals in how to keep people safe. You asked about a cop at the front door. It's better to have a policeman on the campus than to not have a policeman on
Agreed.
The campus. But the reality is, think about the average size high school, how big that high school is.
He's one man.
He's one person on the third floor when the kid comes through the front door with a rifle. By the time the officer gets down there, it's too late. So really, one officer on a school campus is an illusion of security.
The reason why I asked that question to begin with is because since the Parkland shooting, you know, like I said before, in layman's terms, we spend so much time paying attention to what the president said or didn't say. This kind of thing kind of fades from the public eye, and the last place we need to be lackadaisical is when it concerns the safety, health, and welfare of our children.
Absolutely. And this is why I say this is a great time to do what you need to do to make sure your facilities are secure. Okay? We're all going to react after the next shooting. My phone's going to ring off the wall. People are going to be calling me, can you do a threat assessment? Can you come and train my staff? Can you come and look at this and that? Can you write a report about how we responded? And that all happens because they're motivated by the next event. What I'm saying is you should be motivated, just like you're saying, Jack, right now. You should be motivated now before anything happens. Let's teach everyone how to do a student threat assessment. Let's do an assessment on your building. Let's train your staff and get you out of the mentality of it can't happen here. And let's switch that over to we're aware and we prepare. We're not paranoid. We're aware and we prepare.
Right, because if you look at it, as this goes on, as this continues, and God forbid and hope it doesn't, but as this continues, every school that it happens to on down the line, it becomes more and more and more their guilt or their fault that they hadn't been prepared or they hadn't done enough to protect those children.
Yep. I had a superintendent say to me one time, I did a threat assessment for them this past summer, and it was a pretty in-depth assessment. And I asked him, I said, let me ask you a question. There's 25 school districts around you. You're the only one doing this. Why are you doing this? He says, well, the potential for danger is everywhere. We're not overly concerned that we're going to have a problem. He says, but I do not want to be the superintendent that has to get up to that podium and tell the parents of the kids that I love, gee, I'm sorry we didn't do anything to protect you. And I think that's a feeling held by a lot of superintendents and school personnel around the country. You know, this is the moment to do something before something happens. As we approach this terrible anniversary, you know, let's keep those kids in mind and all their families in mind. Let's say a prayer for our country and hope it never happens again. I'd be happy that they put me out of business, that this would never happen again. But in the meantime, we know that's not how life works. So do something now before the next one erupts. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back for round three here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
All right, welcome back to round three here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network. I want to thank my teammates here that are with us here. Rock and roll race car Jack Patterson is here, and Jim the Contrarian Giordano is here again. You guys actually... I get a lot of emails about you guys, how much everybody likes you. And a matter of fact, I think Malcolm from Malcolm Out Loud and Viewpoint has reached out and asked me if you guys would come on Viewpoint or one of his other programs because so many people that listen like you guys. So I said, of course. Now I'm your manager and I get 10%. Everybody gets a taste. Remember, we're from Jersey.
It's the crossover effect, ladies and gentlemen.
So I think what we're going to do is we're going to try and get everybody together one day and see if we can get on one of Malcolm's shows because he would like to introduce you to the nation through his other places because you're fun guys. You're nice guys. Maybe we'll bring some of the ladies into the area also. All right, so a couple things we're going to do here. We are going to play a little game, fellas. This is a game called... Who said that? Oh, excellent. Who said that? All right. So I'm going to read a quote. I want you to think about it. I want you to listen to the individual things that were said, the subject matter, the words that were used in it. I want you to put all your brain power together and see if we can figure out who said that. Okay. So let's see. I'm going to give the first quote. Don't anybody look at my paperwork. Here it goes. I do think that we have to have a secure border. We need to make sure that people are, in fact, documented, but that doesn't mean that we have to threaten people's lives. Who said that? Jim,
is there a buzzer here?
There's a buzzer. That's your buzzer. Very good. Good job.
Let me guess. Ronald Reagan.
No, Jim. Roll up. Nice try. Jack, you want to buzz in? You lose 10 points on your hat if you don't get it right.
Yeah, I'm not going to buzz in then. I'm going to lose my hat.
I'm not going to take your hat
and give it back to you. Who do you think would have said such a thing like that?
I'm going
to
guess Karl Marx.
Karl Marx, no. The answer is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or AOC, as they call her in some places.
Same difference, Joe.
She said that. Okay, let's go. Next quote. Let's see. The idea that we're going to austerity ourselves into prosperity is so mistaken, and honestly, I feel like one of the big problems we have is that because Democrats don't have a deep understanding of or degrees in economics, they allow Wall Street folks to roll in the door and think they're giving them an education. Who said that?
Ding, 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 ding.
Yes, Jack.
Bernie, Joe?
Bernie Sanders. That sounds like something Bernie would say, but not correct. Jim, would you like to throw a gander out there?
Let me guess. Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan. No, Ronald Reagan was not a socialist. Ronald Reagan was a good old American. And that was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Okay, she says a lot of things. Right, here comes the next quote. To me, what socialism means is to guarantee a basic level of dignity. It's asserting the value of saying that the America we want and the America that we are proud of is one in which all...
Ronald Reagan.
Ding, 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 ding. No, Mao Zedong?
Not Mao Zedong. Now, because you both lost, you have to give him your hat and then you have to give him his sweater. No, this was by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. AOC had said that also. All right, so let's go. Let's see if we
can
find it.
That wasn't Karl Marx either?
Okay, here we go. Get ready for this one. I'm going to try all your brain cells. Capitalism has not always existed in the world, and we will not always exist in the... Oh, sorry. Capitalism has not always existed in the world and will not always exist in the world. Who said that? Yes, Jim.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. Wrong.
Ding, 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 ding. Yes. Vladimir Putin.
Vladimir Putin. Good answer, but wrong. Not good. That was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. That's right. She is filled with wisdom. This is amazing.
I'm
this girl.
Amazed.
Let's
see.
She
was my hero. Oh,
now, it's just funny. Never mind. I'm not even going to say what I'm going to say. We're going to stick with the game. We got one more quote here.
Yes, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Yes, Jim, you got it. So it's actually 1-0. You know, that was fun. I hope everybody enjoyed our little game out there. That's a prelude to some games we're setting up.
I was
going to
buzz in and say Kim Jong.
Okay. Yes. Well, no. Interesting. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She is an interesting person, no doubt about it. She's become a media darling. You see her out there. She's become the face of the Democrat Party, whether they like it or not. And I don't know that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer really care for that, because she is becoming the person that everyone's thinking
about. You know why they don't care for it? Because she's exposing the Democratic Party for what it really is.
Mm-hmm. Creeping socialism.
Anti-American, anti-capitalistic, and this whole green movement has nothing to do with green. It is... They want to destroy capitalism because you need to destroy capitalism to destroy the middle class. And once you destroy the middle class, now you're ripe for communism. That's what it's all about.
And I think this goes to a theme that I think we've all seen, we've all spoken about here, is that the reality is as a country, what, 247, 248 years old here in America? We seem to think that it'll never change. That this is unchangeable. When we realize how young we are in the world and how quickly things can change, I think that's a danger to us. And I'm not ringing a bell here saying that, hey, things coming apart, but we've never seen nothing like this before, and people are really believing this is going to go. They want to go socialist.
But it's scary because you look through history, as you said, and no democracy has ever lasted 500 years, and we're on the downslide now.
Yeah, well, you look and you see all those polls that have come out that people under 35, the majority of them, say that socialism is not just okay, but it is a great alternative to capitalism, which is unfair and allows homeless people and poor, and, you know, it's not right, as opposed to socialism, which everyone gets everything they need and everything is fair.
But I'll reiterate what I saw 2 weeks ago on CNN when they had that young lady on their show, and they said, how are you going to fund this socialist movement? I said, it's going to cost $4 trillion. And she had come up with funding for about $38 million. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, that will take us into December. And then what do we do? Where will this money come from?
Yeah.
I think Margaret Thatcher said it best when she said, socialism works great until the end of the year when you run out of money, when you run out of other people's money.
So, yeah, Alexandria is becoming the voice. And she, this is where our biggest danger is that we're laughing at her and we're joking about her. But there are millions and millions of people who are hearing what she has to say. And they're going, you know what? I don't know where the money's going to come from. I don't know if exactly what she's saying is the thing to do. But the overall feeling is the way we should be going.
But is she true? Or is this just a continuance of the popularity that Bernie carried with the same basic program?
Well, I think Bernie opened the door.
He opened the door. But is she just riding the coattails, or is this what she really believes?
I think Bernie's popularity has to do with the people very dissatisfied with government. And people out there think that our government is pure capitalism. No, it isn't. It has become very socialistic over time. It is corrupt. And that corruption is demanding from people a change. So where are they going? They are the uneducated or the misinformed. They're choosing socialism because the American education system, which is where it all starts, it doesn't teach history. It teaches dogma and indoctrination. So most of these young people out there then go right through college, and they don't understand what socialism is.
No, they really don't have any understanding of economics. No, I thought that was funny. She made a comment. Alexandria is actually an economics person from college. And she comes out and says things that are just absurd. Like, Jack, you were talking about, where's the money going to come from? I've seen lots of different people ask that question. And she finally got upset the other day. She goes, it doesn't matter where the money comes from. If we don't have it, we can live on a deficit. Because that it's an investment in the future. We borrow the money from China or wherever. We do all these things we need to do to make the country better. It'll create more jobs. And then we pay that back. So it's really an investment in our future.
With $21 trillion in debt now, maybe 23. Mm-hmm. By the time we get through with her positions, we'll be $100 trillion. Do you know how much each American taxpayer has to pay just to afford the $21 trillion
right.
that we don't know about that's in our credit card? It's on our kids' credit card. It's on your credit card. I don't know the exact number, but I couldn't afford it. I could not afford my fair share of that $21
trillion. $21
trillion.
We can't even comprehend how much money that is.
No, not even.
Pondous.
You know, eventually, like Jimmy was saying, eventually socialism is going to lend you, you know, it's going to drive you directly towards the social system and the working class system of the commune. And the commune is the beginning of communism.
Well, it is because you have no other choice. We talked about
no.
Obama
when your children
care.
Are hungry, you'll agree to any program that comes
point.
Down the road.
That's my point. So when we look at Obamacare, and you saw all the lies we were told about Obamacare, about all, it's going to give you $2,500 a year saving in your health care. Who wouldn't want that? And it's going to do better health care for your family. It's going to cover more things that it was a panacea. The purpose of that was not to give us this great health care. It was to make us all jump on board there, destroy the health care system we had, the insurance system, so that the only thing we'd have left is the government to run it.
The health care.
That's the purpose.
The health care of the commune.
Right.
It's a common health care system. And as a blue-collar working class person, I can tell you this. My medical expenses went from my portion of the program was about $1,200 a year. Now it's over $6,000 of personal expense to me since this Affordable Health Care Act came into being.
Right. But my bigger purpose there, though, Jack, is that it is ridiculously expensive. It doesn't give you $2,500 savings. It costs you, you're just saying right there, about five times more. The whole idea was to destroy the system so that we'd have no choice but to do what our kids need and now go to government health care. Exact same what Jimmy is talking about here. The whole idea here is to crush the middle class so that there's no choice. But and that's to change the fundamentals of America. That's what these people are really after.
I think Jim was getting at it was the destruction, the beginnings of the destruction of the free market economy.
Yes, and that is by plan.
Overall.
Because we're not going to go socialist in this country until we have no choice. And if they can destroy these things one by one, we'll have no, because we need to eat. You need to stay in a house. You need to go somewhere. You need to have food. You need to work. What else are you going to do? And if they can destroy the social networks we have that we count on as Americans, wipe them out, then we have no choice but to go somewhere else, because we don't just disappear, but we have to survive.
Beware, America, because your freedoms are taken away a small piece at a time. They're not taken away wholesale in front of your eyes. They're deteriorated over a term of years.
Right.
As long as money exists, and if you really think about it, where did the concept of money come from? It comes from Babylon, and I use the term the Babylonian magic money slavery system. And that's been imposed upon humanity since 6000 BC. Since then, there's only one system that's been able to mitigate the problems of that slavery, and that's been capitalism. It's not perfect, but what happened is it gives everybody an equal chance, and it's self-regulating. There's no other system out there that works.
Right. Well, you know, you got a point there, Jim, and that's the basics of, and this is where economics, teaching these kids economics and government fundamentals of these different kind of governments and what they do to people and what results. We don't teach this to our kids. They don't understand. Right now they're being told that socialism is about fairness. It's fair. It gives everyone everything they need. The rich don't have everything and everyone else has nothing. Everyone would have things under socialism. We've seen this time and time again. This is what they're told, and then it doesn't really happen. We fall into this abyss of despair, and they're not teaching the kids this. They're teaching them anything but that. So you said that it was not really about the green economy. Let's talk about that for a minute, because Ms. Ocasio-Cortez came out with what she said was the New Green Deal. The New Green Deal was going to be based on the same principles as the New Deal from back in the day to change the way things go in our country. And she came up with some interesting goals. I find it amazing that they're coming right out and saying these things. We all knew that for years this is what they wanted to do, but they hid it. They hid it from everyone. They don't tell you the truth, the Democrat side or the liberal side. So she says we should have 70% income tax for certain groups of people. Well, once you take all the billionaires' money, you take 70% of their money, you can still need lots more money. You said trillions they're talking about. Where do you get that from? You get that from the middle class. That's where all the money really is. You could take all the money off the top 1%. You could take every single nickel. You'd run the country for a few weeks. They got to come to us, to everybody in the middle, and take everything we got to make all of this stuff work. That's what people don't see. So she wants a 70% sales tax or 70% tax on income. And then we're going to get rid of fossil fuels, including all jet aircraft gone within 10 years. Well, it's good because she said we're going to be dead in 10 years.
She wants
12
trains.
Years.
But trains don't pollute.
A train. Well, trains run on electric. That's funny.
You have to need some pollution to create the electric.
Well, can't they put a little fan on the roof of the train and as it's going 100 miles an hour, spins that and makes electric? Come on, think. You had to think a little bit.
Do we have to stop burning fossil fuels? Yes, eventually. Absolutely, we have to stop doing this. And the era that we're currently living now, I think in the future, will be looked at as the oil generation or the oil age. This is something that will come to pass. But to stop it directly, I mean, think about your everyday life. Everything that you use is made with or comes from oil.
Petroleum.
What
product.
System? Well, what
we have
method
to be weaned
of power
off.
Generation right. Do we have that's not pollution free? The only one is nuclear power. Yes, we have that problem with disposing of the nuclear waste. It's the only one, but they don't like that either.
Right.
And they have no solutions. Oh, solar power. I went through a whole evaluation with my house with the solar power. It doesn't work. I've done these analyses from in a previous job. Listen.
Well, you're an engineer by trade.
Yes. And it's viable in certain circumstances, and we should promote it where we could.
Where we can.
But it doesn't. It's not going to solve the problem. We have technologies in the future that are well on the prefaces of getting these things accomplished, and you know that fusion power,
tidal generation,
Yeah, but it's not enough.
It is not.
Yeah, and
fusion is probably the closest. to help us.
Wind power. Well, you know, you have to store that electricity. Right. So you have the windmills going, but it needs to be stored. And that's what people don't understand, because you have to design the electrical systems for peak power. You're not designing it for, you know, what everybody can use.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the, unless you provide the storage capacity for the windmills, and I know we don't want to get into...
Right, we get into the weeds.
Exactly, but the problem is her solutions, there are no solutions.
They're not realistic for American life, for anybody's life.
At this time.
Exactly. To get rid of air travel and have trains go everywhere, just the cost of running rails from here to the next town over is a lot. How do you connect every single town? Well, just like healthcare, when they say there is no death panel, they will not deny you. They will deny some towns. You have to get. You have to walk or take your horse to the train station. You don't get the train station.
The problem is human beings. Right. And I think the next step is that we're going to have to kill people. This is what where they're going. We're going to have to kill people because there's too many people out there.
Well, you see, New Jersey is on the borderline now of coming up with a assisted suicide bill. You know, assisted suicide. And that sounds compassionate. And it's one of those things. It's very hard to define. If somebody's very, very sick and they're dying and they want to die, you know, why not let them? And we can have that argument. But it just brings us further down the road of the death culture. Well, gents, listen, we're running out of time here on Chasing Justice. I really appreciate this. You know, green is great. But in the meantime, we need airplanes and we need fuel to run the cars and keep everybody's house warm. So we need to find other solutions. Thank you very much for joining me today, fellas. I really enjoyed it. And everybody out there in Chasing Justice Land, remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. We'll see you next week. Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.